Hey guys, Pat Tivoli here, episode 3 of the Pat Tivoli Fitness Podcast. I've got another guest today. I'm joined by another man that has a very good podcast, All Things Strength, I think it's called, Mr. Robbie Burke. So we're just going to be talking about all things health, all things life, all things strength, all things everything else. Robbie, how are you?
I'm absolutely brilliant, Pat. Honored to be on your podcast.
I had that right, didn't I, with All Things Strength?
All Things Strength and Wellness is the podcast. All Things Strength was the blog. The reason why that is because... when, like, years ago, I got into just strength and conditioning. I was like, I'll call it All Things Strength. What a cool name. Then, like, I got into the functional medicine. And I was like, damn, I really should just call it All Things Strength and Wellness. So that's why the podcast is called that. Because on the podcast, I interview not just strength coaches, but, you know, all sort of health and wellness practitioners and functional medicine people and, you know, all that sorts.
You've got a fairly unbelievable catalogue of people on that you have interviewed. It's unbelievable to look at.
Yeah. It was funny, I was talking to a friend today about the podcast because he just mentioned to me, and I said, really, I started for purely selfish reasons. I think everyone starts a podcast for selfish reasons because, like, take it, like, just for instance, Paul Check, you know, an hour Paul Check one-on-one is something like $500, and I was like, I could get him on a podcast for free, yeah. Like, you know, like, and I don't mean to sound bad, but I mean, you know, I'm also putting the information out for other people, but it was purely selfish so that I could get an hour with these great people and these great minds that are on that. And yeah, I'm not going to lie, I really do think there's some great interviews on there as well.
Definitely, definitely. So that's what I'm doing with you today, Robbie, stealing you for an hour or a half an hour or whatever, racking your brain, picking your brain. Do you want to give us some background as to where you started and what you do and everything else for people that wouldn't be familiar with yourself?
Yeah, so, you know, as Pat said, the name's Robbie Burke. That's what I've been told that my name is. That's what my parents gave me. I'm a human being. I'm from planet Earth. And that's kind of... kind of way I look at things. How to describe myself? I'm a generous. I'm a very, very holistic person. I mean, if you want to put a name on it, you know, I was initially a strength and conditioning coach, and I still am that. I do some physical therapy and rehabilitation. I'm big into functional medicine and nutrition, but really, I'm just big into life, and I study every single thing that I think can help me understand life better, whether that's biology, anatomy, physiology, evolution, child development, organic agriculture. Not only do I limit to, like, strength and conditioning, physical therapy, functional nutrition and medicine, I also delve into those areas that I just said, you know, even a very basic understanding of things like, you know, some other sciences like quantum physics and things like that, but, you know, spirituality and even just reading different religions and stuff like that. I just love life, and I'm trying to just basically study areas that will help me understand life better and therefore share those experiences with people. And then when it comes to things like, you know, I'm not so much a personal trainer, more of a strength coach, but when it comes to doing strength and conditioning, I believe that all those things can help me provide a better service to the athletes that I train.
Just the next level stuff. Why did you get into all this stuff, Robbie? Where did it all start?
Oh, I was obsessed with hurling as a young kid, and I probably not in a good way. You know, I was really obsessed with hurling. I loved all sport, but hurling was my first love, and I still love hurling. And I knew whatever I was going to do when I got older had to be do with either sport or health and wellness, whatever. And when I was, you know, a teenager, I kind of got into doing running because I was actually a very heavy kid. I was a fat kid, you know, kind of had that, you know, that quote unquote puppy fat. And, you know, you take a stretch. People you grow out of it, you'll take a stretch. And I kind of did. But I got into running too, I think more of a self-conscious thing. I kind of wanted to lose weight. So, you know, not knowing anything as a kid, I started doing running and I started to like running. And then, you know, I didn't like school. Didn't do well in school, like the school system. I mean, that could be a whole podcast in itself. It's you know, not to get explicit, but I don't think we swear this, you can blank this out, but it's a lot of bollocks,
yeah.
For the most part. Don't get me wrong, and again, like, it's like conventional medicine. The teachers are doing the best they can. I mean, that's how they're taught to teach. So I'm not attacking anyone here on this, but I didn't do well in school. Not that I didn't do well in school. School just didn't sit well with me. I was always kind of like a rebel, but looking back when I was a teenager, I look at other things like my sleep and my diet all over the place. They probably contribute to my mindset, but I just always knew whatever I did, it had to be something to do with fitness or health and wellness. So at 19, I just did a basic personal training course. Out of that, I got a job in DCU, worked in DCU for 2 years, met one of my mentors there, Martina McCarty, who is someone, it's funny, I'm one of these people where, like, my best friend is someone I might talk to 5 times a year. I'm just one of those people. I'm a complete introvert with that kind of thing. And Martina is someone who I mightn't see every day or even like once every 6 months, but she's a very special person to me.
Yeah.
And I owe a lot to her. I always mention her as one of my mentors, and she's someone I would always seek to advice. And so from DCU then I went to Mike Boyle Strength and Condition in September 2009. Again, Mike would be another huge mentor, and even the people who I worked with there would be friends and mentors, like Nicole Rodriguez, Kyle Holland, Dan Gableman, friends I also made there like Dave Rack and Kevin Carr. I'm trying not to leave out anyone. Anthony Mirando, Gabe, Steve Bunker, all those great guys there. Anyone, if I didn't mention it, I'm sorry. Jamie Smith as well. So I interned and then I came back, Pat, to Dublin 2010. And I've been working out in the Fianna Gael club since that, and I'm the worst businessman in the world. You know, I just thought, I'll come back now and I'll just open up a Mike Boyle Strength and Condition and I'll do that and that. And just, you know, but it hasn't really come to fruition so much as much. But all I've been doing since that is just kind of doing strength and condition with the hurlers and the footballers there in the club, and doing a small bit of just one-on-one. I do a lot of physical therapy rehab, and what I've really delved into since 2011 is functional medicine, and very much so into, you know, all types of nutrition, all types of medicine, particularly functional medicine and functional clinical nutrition, and just all types of health and wellness and spirituality. So strength and condition was kind of the door. It was that, you know, that got my foot in the door, and then I kind of dwelled into other areas, and I've kind of seen that, wow, there's a much bigger picture here, you know. And as I said earlier on in the opening, like, I'm just a student of life. And but that's how I got into kind of more of the fitness, strength and condition end of things.
Obviously, Rob, most people don't look into all these different areas the way you do. And how do you find that translates when you're dealing with the general public, you know, and you've got the hurling teams, or you've got, you know, personal training clients or strength and conditioning clients coming to you, and you're taking this holistic approach? How do you approach that, and how do they take to that?
It's not, let's say with the hurlers, it's not that I necessarily I'm trying to apply like all of this. It's not like I'm trying to dump all of this on top of people. But for me as a coach, it gives me much more appreciation of the individual. So a great person called Jock Fresco, the Venus Project, I just watched him one day. I studied him and I studied his material, and he came out with one of the best things I've ever heard. And he just said, everybody is a victim of their culture, and everybody is the way they are for a specific reason. And when you understand that as a personal trainer or as a strength coach, as a clinician, as a doctor, it makes you just sit back and say, you know, it makes you appreciate why people are the way they are. So like, you might have those clients, why can't those clients just not eat those foods? Why can't they just do the exercise? Why this, why that? And you realize that there's a conscious and subconscious mind involved. There's an environment that shapes us as humans. Like, no baby is born in the world with any prejudice or any judgments. They are all learned habits from their environment. And that is why looking at these certain fields outside of strength and conditioning can help you then be a better coach. Because you're like, okay, like, I understand I have to change this person's habits. Instead of judging them and being like, oh, well, you didn't fill out your food diary, what do you expect me to do? Be more sort of like, listen, this person is the way they are for a reason. They've been eating this way for this many years. They have these certain subconscious beliefs from the way they were raised by their parents and their environment. And once you kind of understand that, you can kind of step back and be like, go with this person with a different approach. You can be more have more empathy towards the person. Yeah. And the person then sees that from you. They're like, wow, like I keep like eating bad foods, and I feel like, you know, I keep skipping a session here and there, but this guy is so positive, and he's never focusing on my negatives. He's like, listen, you came here and did two sessions this week. Okay, you were down for three, but you did two. That's better than one. Okay, you ate bad 5 days this week, but you ate well twice this week. Like, that's better than nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so seeing it from that angle, I think a lot of times with us as coaches and trainers, we don't meet the person where they are at. Like, I notice I've made these mistakes. I'm kind of like, why can't you, you know, you don't say this, but in your head, you're like, why can't you just be like me? Like, why can't you just eat like me and go to the bed at my time? And it's because that person has been shaped by their environment up until now. That person is the way they are for a reason. And when you understand that, you truly can't have any sort of, I wouldn't say hatred, hatred's a strong word, but you can't have any sort of negative judgmentalness, if that is even a word, towards that person. That's not to say, now, there's a great philosopher, Alan Watts, who says, you know, you never have a wrong feeling, whether it's love or hate. That's not to say, like, it's not wrong to say that person annoys me, but it's very important to understand that person is a specific reason for the way that they are.
Yeah.
If you get what I mean. So I think, look, I have very long-winded answers. I'm kind of like Mike Boyle.
He's just
long-winded answers. But I always tell people, look outside your field. There's so much you can learn from other fields that will just transfer so well into your own expertise, your own field of expertise, and it will just make you better at delivering the service that you're delivering.
That was the big one when you came down, because Robbie came down and spoke at our place in Barna not too long ago, and that was the take-home point for me, was everyone is the way they are for a reason, and sometimes they don't know why they're that way and we don't know why they are that way, but just having compassion and empathy and everything's a big thing. When you came down, Robbie, we were just looking at kind of general health and wellness, and where are we going wrong? Like, we're going wrong so many places, but where is the average person going wrong in terms of being a healthy person?
Absolutely. What a lovely question to ask me. I'll try not to be so long-winded, but because I actually put this question, and I'm not that active on my Facebook for anyone to listen to me, because I'm not one of these people, Facebook has ruined us, we're not social anymore. Listen, it can be a very good thing, it can be a very bad thing. It's like the internet as well, it's like lots of things. It's, you know, we still need some human interaction, so Facebook isn't that bad. But I put a question out there on Facebook, and it was like, okay, why do people who are reading this, why do you think humans really struggle to reach their full potential life? Is it school? Is it parents? Is it society? Is it nutrition? Is it circadian mismatches? So sleep, you know, bad sleep patterns and stuff like that. Is it environmental toxins? Is it all the above factors and even more? And I fully believe it's all the above factors. And if you want to put that under one umbrella, we'll just call it the environment. And by environment, we mean environmental factors. So again, the things I just named. Yeah. So for me, why are people struggling with health and wellness and not reaching their goals? There's all those factors, Pat. If you go right back into when the baby is in the mother's stomach when she's pregnant, so the baby's an embryo inside the mother's mental emotional state sets the internal environment for that baby, okay? So I've used this example, and I get to, this isn't me, this is research. This comes from Joseph Shilton Pierce and Bruce Lipton. They've done research on rats where they've proven this. A pregnant rat, she has her baby inside her, they put the rat in a stressful environment, and basically very basic. Our brain has what's called a reptilian part, a mammalian emotional or limbic part, and then our frontal cortex, which is what makes us humans. That reptilian brain, though, is our fight-flight brain. That's our brain that is like, all right, I'm either going to stay here and be a fighter, or I'm going to run like hell. But it's a really anxious, very jittery, very sort of like sympathetic, just always putting out stress hormones type brain. And if the mother is in a stress environment, that baby's brain gets more blood flow and nutrition overall blood flow nutrition to that part of the brain. The environmental thing that baby's getting is, okay, the world is a hostile place, I need to be a fighter, I need to be a warrior, and that's the baby's first impression of what life is going to be like. So straight away that baby is at a disadvantage. That baby's already, that's the person who at 20, 30, 40, 50 is that negative person. Everything's negative. Life is a struggle. It's tough. It's dog eat dog. You don't like being around that person. And you're like, this goes back again to that person is the way they are for a reason. But that, you're like, that person is just so negative. He's an asshole. I hate being around him. But it's, again, it's going back to trying to understand, why did he end up like that? And I'm going right back to even just when he's an embryo. Obviously, there's also developmental conditioning when you're 2, 3, 4, 5, and even up to 10 years of age. They're very crucial periods. But if just conversely, if the mother is in a very loving environment, then the child's forebrain, so the neocortex, that gets more blood flow and nutrition. Now that child's not becoming a warrior, that child is becoming a problem solver, that child's becoming a lover, that child will not want to make wars, that child will want to discuss and rationalize and invent things and help people. That's the complete opposite. So you can already see that how we set the environment for our pregnant women, for our mothers of our children, is so crucial to how we end up as people. Then, as I said, those developmental years, you got to take so many things into consideration. Conscious parenting, being a conscious parent, you need to be a role model to your kid. You know, there's a great guy called Osho. Osho had a great audiobook, and I've only listened to the first like 10, 15, 20 minutes of it, but there's a question and the mother goes, how do I help my child reach his potential? And Osho says, your question has no meaning, it's all wrong. You never ever help your child. All your child needs is your love. If you try and help your child, you will only interfere with its development. And that's the problem with parents today. And I'm not attacking any parents. It's just a fact. I don't want to say it's a fact, but it's very clear in a lot of situations that, you know, a lot of times parents want to put their beliefs and their opinions on top of their child. This is the God you believe in. This is the way you live your life. You better get a 9-to-5 job, work hard. They put these beliefs on top of us at a young age that can become subconscious beliefs. And then we have these subconscious beliefs then that for better or for worse can dictate our health, our wellness and our happiness later on in life. Mm. And that's just one environmental influence. So I just showed the environmental influence of when we're an embryo inside our mother and then when we're kids around our parents. Then you also have the environmental factors of the friends we hang around, the teachers we have, the schooling system, the food we put in our mouths, the political system, the economic system, the habits we form from other, like, you know, the times we go to bed at, all that type of stuff. That,
we're screwed.
All that stuff, all that stuff is, yeah, we're not screwed, but I think where I'm going to go at some part in my life, Pat, I said it to my mother the other day, I was like, and I said it to a few other people, the most important job in the world, and there's no education on it, parenting. Like, there's nothing out there on parenting, like, nothing. It's the blind leading the blind for the vast majority. Don't get me wrong, parents are doing the best they can. Yeah. It's the same with conventional medicine. People want to say, oh, doctors, conventional medicine, they're all, like kind of the people in the more alternative world, they're like, oh, they're all evil, they're all out to get money. And it's like, but they don't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's what they're taught. They're brainwashed to be like, and it's no different with parents. Where did those parents learn? Like, it's like Paul Check says, everybody loves the best that they can with the love training that they've gotten. So, I mean, if you know, it's just, you know, their parents were that way and their parents were that way, and we go back and back and back, and it's a bit of a vicious cycle. And it's just about someone stepping in and saying, listen, let's enlighten ourselves. Let's try a different approach. And it's definitely environment with regards to people's health and wellness. And parenting is a huge part of that. And then the habits we form from the people around us, our parents and our guardians. And those habits are things like our nutritional habits, our sleep habits, our attitude habits. It's all that.
With nutrition, we'll often talk about getting back to basics. So just cutting out processed is a very obvious change you can make. Is paleo perfect, or is the caveman diet perfect, or how can it be improved upon?
I think the premise of paleo, like paleo and primal, they're just words, and now they're kind of getting, oh, paleo, primal, like, they're kind of, people are kind of like, oh, it's a lot of, you know, they're kind of getting negative, sort of, oh, is this paleo, is that paleo? Like, the premise of paleo, to me, like, I'm more of a Sean Croxon guy, who's like, Sean is just JERF, which stands for just eat real food. I'm more like that. Yeah. Just eat real food. If you do that majority of the time, you're fine. And like, see, the other thing too is paleo. When people say paleo, they automatically think, well, most people do, oh, low carb, low carb. That's not necessarily the case. Like, you could be on a higher ratio of carbs and still be eating paleo if you like. You know what I mean? So you've heard me speak before with nutrition. The thing with nutrition is everybody is unique. Everybody is an individual. There is no one nutritional protocol or lifestyle or diet that's going to suit every single human being on this planet. And to think that is completely illogical. Again, it goes back to environmental influences. There's too many different environmental influences to say that this is one diet everyone should stick by. Everybody should eat at 7 and 12 and 6 in the evening. And it should be these meals and it should be always these foods. You know, it's just ridiculous. You can't be like that. I mean, look at Weston Price's work. But I do believe the premise of the paleo diet for the most part is very dead on. But the one thing I would say is that the macronutrient ratios are going to be very different for everybody, depending on what's going on in their lives. A very easy example is, if I'm going through a very heavy training block, Pat, and I'm trying to put on muscle, is my diet going to be different than when I'm not in a heavy training block and I'm just like maybe traveling around or doing some study? Of course, sure. It is. My body's going to demand more nutrients, more calories to build up muscle, more energy for the heavy training block than it is when maybe I'm doing 4 weeks where I'm traveling, I'm in planes where maybe I might eat a little higher. That might be more like, you know, a lot of water, maybe some intermittent fasting. You know, it's going to be much different.
Yeah.
Like, our nutritional requirements is going to be very different from person to person, but it's also going to be different within our cells on a day-to-day, month-to-month, season-to-season basis, depending on the environmental factors in our life. You know, so again, going back to our training regime, the stress in our life, you know, so there could be a wedding coming up, exams. Our body's nutritional requirements are changing all the time. We're dynamic systems. We don't have static nutritional requirements, but I do believe that our nutrition and our food should be from Mother Nature. It should be whole foods for the most part, and that the only caveat that I give is that the macronutrient ratios are just going to be different from person to person. So for the most part with paleo, I do agree with their, you know, just eat real food for the most part. I do agree with that. I would just say toy around with the macronutrient ratio. So some meals might have more carbs, some meals might have more fat and protein and lower carb. It depends, again, what's going on in your life.
I like that, Jilf. Just eat real food.
Yeah, exactly.
This is kind of on a tangent, but you're going off on tangents too, so we'll be well suited. You're obviously doing a lot of study in all different areas and looking into all these things. Study, you were saying you weren't into school and it wasn't for you at the time. Is study something that comes natural? Is it something that you can do because you're interested in it, or is something that you've kind of trained yourself to become more efficient at? Or how do people get more efficient at studying and stuff like that? Is there anything there?
I honest to God, I haven't really sat down and talked to this. This is the great thing about podcasts too, when you're talking to someone face to face, because on Facebook you can you wrote that on Facebook. Now I could sit down for 20 minutes, I contrive a really planned answer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know, but like, this is the good thing about this, because it's real life, and you know what's kind of just going to come out comes out. I believe it's just when you have a passion for something, you just have a passion for it, and I just have a passion for, as I said, the areas that I've spoken about already. You know, initially it was strength and conditioning, and that opened the door then to like functional medicine and, you know, physical therapy and rehab. They opened the doors then into like, you know, child development and just all that type of stuff. And the you know, obviously, of course, with strength and conditioning, you're going to be into anatomy and physiology, and then, you know, there's biology and the sciences. So I with studying, if you just have a passion for it, it just comes naturally. Like, it shouldn't really be. It shouldn't be a case where, like, you open up a book and it's like, oh, it's torture to read this, but I know I should read it.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I actually had another discussion with the same friend earlier on. I think I said I was having a discussion with someone, but I was having a discussion with another friend as well today about this, about, like, he goes, geez, you must read a lot. And I say, I do. But I said, listen, I read when I want to read. I don't force myself to do it. I said, there's also times where I don't read and all I do is I think. I was like, thinking is also good. Reading is the education part, but thinking is the experience. It's okay, like, to not listen to the podcast when you're going for a walk. It's okay not to be like, oh, I didn't read 20 pages today. Yeah, but did you think? Did you, like, walk and actually have a think, like, real deep, looked inside yourself? And, like, because they're the times when you get those eureka moments. Your brain is actually... It doesn't have any white noise in the way, and they're the times you might get those bits of inspiration when you just actually allow yourself to, okay, I've enough. It's like eating. I've ingested enough information. Let me digest something here now. So people kind of feel guilty when they're like, oh, I didn't listen to a podcast. I didn't read any books today. I'm like, yeah, but it's okay just to think. I gave the example of my friend today of Ralph Waldo Emerson. I'm like, Emerson wrote some of the most miraculous essays. Like, Self-Reliance is one of my favorite essays. I love it. Like, I get emotional. Like, I get teary-eyed thinking about that essay. It gives me goosebumps. It's just... like, that man wrote that in the middle of the 19th century. No Facebook, no internet, no electricity. He didn't have a running toilet, probably. He was out in the middle of the woods, and he wrote the most incredible, beautiful essay. And that's what I'm trying to convey to people. Sometimes you don't need more information. You just need to be with you and just experience. Yeah. So it's like Paul Check says, there's education and there's experience. A lot of people are book smart, they have the education, but they've never felt what it's like to be on a certain diet. They've never felt what it's like to love a person. They've never felt what it's like to be in the Sistine Chapel and smell it. I'm stealing that from Goodwill Hunting, but I'm giving them an example. You know, it's exactly like Goodwill Hunting, actually, in that scene with Robin Williams and Matt Damon. And he turns to Matt Damon and he says, you're a smart kid. But he's like, he says, but you've never been outside of Boston. He's like, so basically said, you don't know, you know, you've never experienced it. You don't know jack shit. Like, you might know like the mathematical equations. You might know how to make a car because you've read it, but you don't know what it feels like. And so what I'm trying to say here is that while reading and having a passion for it is absolutely essential, don't feel guilty that you didn't like read more. Sometimes it's okay to step back and experience things.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something most people don't get, is it time for themselves and time to think and everything else. It's one of the curses of our generation. I think you're just stuck in the noise and stuck in the bubble and you don't get time for yourself. So definitely as much value in that, if not more.
Definitely, you know what I mean? 100%.
Switching gears again, somebody was asking if I would ask you about kind of the link between nutrition and mental health.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a big one for me too, because I do friends who study psychology, and I've said this in talks, I fully believe that the vast majority of mental health issues have biochemical causes, have biochemical factors at their root cause. And I believe that all mental health issues have biochemical factors as a contributing factor. Now, just let me... disagree with that, am I saying that nutrition causes every single mental health disorder? No. Am I saying that I believe nutrition causes a lot of them? Yes. Am I saying that nutrition contributes to probably all of them? Absolutely, I do. Like if you like read books, I'm looking at my bookshelf here, Gut and Psychology Syndrome by Dr. Natasha Campbell-Bright, Molecules of Emotion by Kansas Peart, anything by Julia Roth, The Mood Cure, The Diet Cure, like there's Nutrition and Mental Illness by Cassie Pfeiffer, Orthomolecular Therapy, I mean, Primal Body, Primal Mind by Nora Gagadis. I mean, I could go on and on. There's so many books here. Ultra Prevention. Like, we know this sort of stuff. Our neurotransmitters, like, if we don't digest protein, so if we got bad digestion and we do not assimilate and digest our proteins, we're not going to make the precursors to neurotransmitters for our brain to function properly. If we have any issues with fat metabolism or cholesterol, our brain synapses are not going to work efficiently. If we have issues with blood sugar regulation, this is a huge one. Blood sugar regulation. You go to a doctor. Oh, you've got bipolar. You don't have bipolar. You've got blood sugar issues. You're hyperglycemic, and you're like, yeah, I'm all hyper. I've got loads of energy. And then your insulin takes your blood sugar way down, and you're having a hypoglycemic attack. And then you're all like, oh, the headache, a migraine. Fuck off, life is shit. You know, it's just like your blood sugar relation's all over the place. It's like nutrition is so huge to mental health. It's unbelievable. Like, our immune system, our good associated lymphatic tissue is in our gut wall. I mean, if your immune system is shot, your gut is shot, you've got bad digestion. Like, if you have constipation, Pat, are you feeling fairly happy?
Not at the best of times, no.
You know what I mean? So, like, we know this. We know that nutrition, ask just simple questions. What do you like when you're hungry? Are you in good form? No, you're not. Of course you're not. What do you like with a hangover? You're in bits. Again, you drank alcohol, you put a toxin inside your body, and then your mental output is, I feel like crap.
The fear, that's probably the best example of it, isn't it?
Like, so nutrition is massive. Now, I'm not discounting things, again, like developmental kinesiology, let's say, that's the developmental conditioning. I'm not discounting those things. I'm not discounting, again, things like abuse or anything like that. They are huge factors as well. What I am saying, as I'll state again, is do I believe that nutrition is the root cause of a lot of mental health issues? Yes, I do. And nutrition and things like gut health. Do I believe that it contributes to all mental health issues? Yes. Do I believe it causes all mental issues? No. But I do believe it can contribute and is the major factor behind a lot of mental health issues. So to me, nutrition is huge. And the resources I named are definitely ones I would check out. And any functional medicine practitioner. I mean, there's so many things, Pat. I mean, just being deficient in just basic nutrients and cofactors, your body's just not going to function right. Even if your cell, your mitochondria, respiration isn't working right, your brain and everything's not going to work right. Even a simple thing like everyone now, there's so many toxins in our food and environment, you're going to have a toxic liver. You have a toxic liver, you have toxic blood. You've got toxic blood, you've got a toxic brain, and your brain's not going to work right. That's very simple there, because all your blood gets filtered through your liver. If it's toxic, you're going to have toxic blood flowing through your brain, and you're not going to think clearly. Simple as that. And other things are like your sleep. If your sleep is off, if you're out of circadian rhythms, like people always hear me say, it's a harp on. I'm in my bedroom right now with blue blocker glasses on my phone and a candle lighting. you came on and said, I've got a lamp on, you wouldn't approve. but just simple things like sleep. Sleep regulates your neurotransmitter balance in your brain. There's another mental health thing. It regulates your blood sugar, another thing. Regulates your immune system, another thing. So that's your circadian. So even if your circadian rhythm's out of sync, you're not going to be too happy either. Mm. And I'm telling you, I see this over and over again. If you ask me what's my number one health tip, it would be sleep. I'd even put that before nutrition, you know, that at this stage. I'm like, if people just got their sleep dialed in right, I think that would really help the work. But absolutely, nutrition, good health, huge in mental health, massive.
It's something we might look at in the new year, is putting together, getting a couple of guest speakers and putting together something on health, wellness and mental health. And
I'd be 100%, I'd love to be a part of that.
Just look at doing that. I was laughing when Robbie came down and did the seminar in Galway not too long ago. Usually when people come down to Galway, they want to go out in the beer and they want to go out and see the town. Robbie was in bed by 9. So you've got the sleep cycle down the way, you know, they say it should be with the circadian rhythm and everything else. For someone who's all over the place with their sleep patterns, outside of, you know, improving nutrition and getting back to real food, is there other things that people can look at doing to make that a more... you know, get back into rhythm
there definitely is. And again, I go back to what we were talking about, where like you got to meet people where they are. I don't expect people to live the way I do. Like, my father just doesn't understand the way he thinks I live a boring life, but it's who I am. Like, I'm like, you can see how happy and passionate I'm talking about this stuff. Like, to me, going out at night, it's just not who I am. And the people who go out, that's fine. But and you've heard me speak. What I also say is, I don't want you to live like this 100% of the time. I'm just saying, listen, if you do want to have reasonably good health, I'll tell you what, I'll go back a second, and I don't know if you heard me say this too. I always talk about the health continuum. So we'll say at one end of the continuum is optimal health. At the other end of the continuum is death. All I'm trying to do with my information is push you as close as possible to optimal health as possible.
Yeah.
Listen, we're never going to get there. We're never going to have optimal health. So there's a great saying, if you strive for perfection, you'll get excellence. And that's all I want. So if you from Monday to Friday, you're dialing in your circadian rhythm, and then you're going out Saturday and getting it back again maybe on the Sunday, and then you're back again, that is much better than being all over the place all the week. You know, even if your sleep is all over the place 7 days of the week and you're getting it right one day out of the week, is that better? Of course it is.
Yeah.
And that's if you do that, that's better than nothing.
Just the compound, it's the compound effect, isn't it? Just making these small changes.
That's all it is. And listen, Pat, I'm as guilty as anyone. I was one of those people who was like, you got to change all this straight away, dumping way too much on people. And that will work with the you know, the clients that are I'm all in or all out. But
5%, they're a very
small percentage of our clients. The majority of our clients are usually in that middle range, or else they're in that they just need to be told specifically what to do, and needs to be one habit at a time. But very realistic things you can do with your sleep. Listen, guys, get to bed at 9 o'clock in the winter time. Even if you got to bed at 9 o'clock in the winter time. Now, I'm not saying asleep, I'm just saying get into a dark room at 9 o'clock in the winter time. You'd be doing much better. If you really wanted to push it out when it gets dark, I'd say after 6 o'clock in the winter, get some red light bulbs or amber light bulbs. You can buy them on Amazon. They don't. And the reason for this is, guys, white light that you turn on, artificial lights that we turn on, or any light that comes from an iPhone or an iPad or televisions, what it does is it stimulates, it cuts off the production of melatonin. We're meant to start producing melatonin at night time when it gets dark, and that helps us to go to sleep. And it's a crucial part of our immune system. Very, very important. If you're not producing melatonin, you're going to have a very weak immune system in the long run. But that's why white light stops that. What white light does is it's actually called blue light. It shines a blue light, but I'm just saying white light so people can associate with that. It elevates cortisol. When you have artificial light on at nighttime, your body's like, oh, look, the sun is out. And then so when the sun is out, it means cortisol should be producing. Cortisol is a stress hormone we produce in our adrenal glands. So that cortisol is meant to be highest in the morning when the sun rises, and it's meant to be lowest at nighttime so that we can fall asleep. And melatonin goes in the converse of that. Melatonin is lowest in the morning and highest at night. And that's the way it's meant to be. But most people's rhythm is the other way around. They've got low cortisol in the morning. They're the people that have to hit the alarm clock and the snooze button, and they have to drag themselves out of bed and drink the coffee and get the sugar in to stimulate their adrenals to make some cortisol. So that's why you want to get these circadian rhythms back in sync. But practical things will be, Pat, I would just say, listen, even at winter time, if you just got into a dark room at 9 o'clock, read a book for half an hour, an hour, and fell asleep at 10, you'd be doing yourself a huge service. And in the summertime, guys, you can stay up till 11. You can stay up till half 11, 12. Why? Because it doesn't get dark till then.
Yeah.
It's not that you have to be in bed at 9 o'clock every night. You do it by the seasons. Everything is a season. Everything is a cycle. Everything in life is a cycle. That's one great thing I learned from a guy called Dan Path, the great sprint coach. I won't get into that, but it's one great thing he always... Everything goes in cycles. The universe is dualistic. Man, woman, summer, winter. So in the summertime, you can stay up late, you can eat more carbs, because carbs are around in the summertime, you can do all that stuff, you can sleep a little less, but when it gets to wintertime, guys, you gotta go back with Mother Nature. The reason why we're having such health issues is we've got endless summer, we never turn off the lights, it's summer, we've got summer in, you know, June, July, August, and then we're supposed to have hibernation and winter and darkness in, you know, October, November, December. We can't have endless summer. Endless summer is killing us right now. And with endless summer, we also have, because we can control our environment, we also have a never-ending supply of carbohydrates. You know, so we're stuffing carbohydrates in our faces in the middle, in the depths of winter, when that would never have been available at any time in our evolution. Do you know what I mean? So, but just with the lights at wintertime, guys, if you did it and turn them off at 9 o'clock, you know, got a candle on, read a book, or got some red or amber lights in your light bulbs, you'd be doing yourself a huge service. Like, sir, I cannot emphasize circadian rhythms enough. They're unbelievable health. And again, I go back to, am I saying you have to do this every day for the rest of your life? No. But are we trying to stay more closer to that end of the optimal health continuum? Yeah. So that's all I'm saying. But
what's the approach then for a shift worker, Robbie? How do they get around it? Is it just a case of...
Honestly, Pat, like I've heard a few people speak about this. I have got two very good answers. One is you're gonna have to get a new job. Okay, first of all, what is, like, listen, that's just gonna kill you. You're taking, you're increasing your risk for all all mortality. Like, in America, in the National Health Institute, shift work is down as a known carcinogen. Okay. That's a fact now. So my thing with you, listen, you have to get a new job. Now, there's people listening going, listen, that's obviously not practical. I have a mortgage to pay off. Now, so what I have read in a great book called Sir Kane's Prescription by a doctor called Sidney M. Baker, he did a very, very interesting protocol. I thought this was good. He basically said, okay, shift work is not good. Try and get out of it as quick as you can. But if you have to do it, this is the best way he believes you can do it. You basically have to fool your body that when you're working at nighttime, that it's the daytime. So he's like, turn every single light on possible. Hmm. And he says, eat a big, hefty, like he says, you get up. So if it's, I don't know, if your shift work is at, let's say you start work at 8 in the evening. He's like, get up out of bed and treat it if it's first thing in the morning. And he says, eat breakfast. Even if it's 8 p.m. at night. He's trying to trick your body, like, and be around bright lights all the time. So your body's like, oh, this is daytime. And then he says, then eat a lunch and then eat a supper. And then when you go home, black out your whole bedroom as if it's nighttime. So he's basically trying to just, because your body needs that day and night. It needs that day and night. Now, that was his suggestions. And to me, you know, it's making the best of the worst situation, if you kind of understand me. Yeah. Like, it's still not good, like, but I mean, would that probably be better than, you know, being all over the place? It probably would. Now, I'm not saying that this works. I just read it in a book. I read it by a fairly, you know, and I found it interesting. I was like, that probably is, you know, it would give that a bash. I'm just putting that out there. I'm sharing that. I'm not saying that that's a fact or it's going to be the answer. My first answer I stick by, you just got to get a new job. Shift work is a disaster for your health. It's just a disaster. And, like, it's a complete, what Jack Cruz would call a complete biological mismatch. It's just not meant to happen. I'm sorry, that's the truth. But if you want to go with what I just described there, I'd get that circadian prescription book and maybe give it a bash.
Here's one, Robbie. Again, a tangent, but Christmas season, Christmas parties, damage control. How do people minimize the hangovers or the effects of the junk food and the beer?
This is a good question too, because again, I don't want to give the impression that I'm a, you know, I hope I haven't given the impression that I'm doom and gloom and, you know, all this. I'm not that at all. I'm actually, you know, the more I kind of learn, Alan Watts is this great thing, like, stop trying to save the world. Like, so, you know, people are always like, oh, we got to make the world better. You know, everything has to be good. And Alan Watts has a great thing. He's like, well, how would you know good if there was no evil? So Adam wants to try to say, like, it's very necessary that there's both parts. He said, like, you know, you wouldn't know saints if there weren't sinners. So I've kind of realized, you know, stop trying to save the world. You know what I mean? Just you do your best and all that. But what I'm trying to say here is, with the damage control, listen, guys, feck it. It's Christmas time. Go out, enjoy yourselves. What I try to do with my information is empower people to know what to do when Christmas season's over. So, like, I always give the example, like, when you go on your two-week holiday or your week holiday, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to go on my holiday, my sleep patterns will be all over the place, I'm going to drink, I'm going to eat, but when I come home, I know what to do. I'm going back on my, whatever, paleo diet, my eat real food diet, I'm going to dial my sleep back in, I might do a coffee enema, I might, I might do a juice cleanse, I might do whatever. Like, people, it's been empowered with that information, that knowledge, you know, listen, I can take 7 weeks of, you know, technically abusing my body and having a bit of crack with the lads or the girlfriends, because in the back of my mind, I know that I know how to get my body, you know, back up to where it needs to be, because I understand that nutrition's important, I understand the sleep, and I understand the steps to get me back, and that's the damage control. So I would say, you know, enjoy yourselves, like, and then, you know, when Christmas is over, and if you've made your mind up, that's the day, right, that's when my sleep's back in, that's what I'm going to maybe do, clean out my liver, or I might go do a what's that thing called where you get your bowel cleaned out again?
Oh, colonic, is it?
Colonic, yeah. Like, I might get a colonic irrigation on after the season. Just stuff like simple things like that, you know. And just, but even simpler things, just go back on eating clean food, getting your sleep in, drinking some water. That's your damage control right there. Have fun. Like, I'm not, like, I don't want to come across like, I'm not, like, have your drinks, have your chocolate. I'm not, for me, personally, I just don't want to eat that food. This is me, because people to me think, a lot of people, I think that, oh, if you don't eat that food, you must, like, have a miserable life and hate it. It's not. I would actually be miserable if I had to eat those foods, you know. It's just the way I am now, you know. I'm happy, and it's not that I don't eat miserable foods. I mean, like, I don't think eating, like, lovely meat and fish and vegetables and organic yogurt or you know, whatever it is torture. You know yourself, you eat pretty similar to me, like,
yeah.
But no, so that would be my thing for damage control. Just empower, like, that's what I want to empower yourself. Know that, like, people have this thing in their mind too, like, you know, because I often talk to my friends, I'm always like, you know, losing weight is so easy. And they're like, it's not, it's so hard to lose weight. I'm like, you know, I'm just like, it's so simple. Like, it's ridiculous. It's just the habit you have to change. It's just like, I can manipulate my body weight so much in the space of a month. I can just stuff my face, lift loads of weights, put on a bit of muscle and probably a bit of body fat. And then, like, literally in another 2 weeks, I could intermittent fast and just do more heavy rep stuff rather than high rep stuff. And I can, it's so easy to manipulate your physiology, like, and it's just really just about empowering people that, listen, like, you know, your body is capable of amazing things. If you just know how to manipulate that through your lifestyle and your food, don't be worrying about it. So damage control, enjoy yourselves, and then just when season's over, get back to eating real food, sleeping, and getting the water into
you. You mentioned a juice cleanse in passing there. What's the guidelines there, or what's the recommended? It's something that's obviously, you know, a bit of a, not a fad, but it's in the media all the time, and it's something the celebrities do and everything else. So people have heard of it. They're somewhat familiar with it. What's the best approach if people were looking at doing a juice cleanse? Have you any?
I'm not going to lie. I've never personally done a juice cleanse, so I'm not going to expose anything here. All I know is that juice cleanses or any sort of vegan type of cleanse and detox can be extremely beneficial, done every now and again. Again, it's like Dan John saying, everything works for a while and then it doesn't. So, yeah. Like, you know, because you get people going on vegan diets where they go on a vegan diet, oh, I felt so good, but then they stayed on it for 3 years and it's like, oh, you stayed on it too long. No wonder you're not feeling good now.
Yeah.
But they're great for short periods of time. I would look up Drew Cannoli. He's very good with juice fasts. I have used some. I do juicing, and I've done some juicing, but I've never really gone on a juice sort of fast or anything like that. But juices can be excellent just to get those micronutrients here. Like, you really can't go wrong with juicing. Like, people are like, what should I put into it? I was like, you can't really go wrong. Like, some celery, some spinach, an apple, a carrot, small bit of ginger. Like, there's loads of different recipes.
Jason Vale's the juice guy, isn't he?
Jason Vale, another great resource. So I would check out those guys. Those guys know far more than me on juices. Are they a fad? It's kind of like anything, Pat. It's like yoga. It's like yoga got westernized, and it's kind of like, oh, now it's a fad. Whereas yogis was a way of life and a way of living. Like, it had so much, what's the word for it?
Authenticity,
authenticity to it. Same with juicing, you know, those juice fasts. Those things are wonderful, so cleansing. You know, people feel that they're very spiritual experiences, and that's great what they're for. But most, it's westernized again. It's like, do this for 5 days and lose a stone. You know yourself, that bullshit. Like, and then people think it's going to be the thing. Now, for kickstarting some health and fat loss, absolutely. Again, with me, I'm one of these people, listen, it depends on the context. What are you using this for? Why do you want to use it? I think juicing's excellent. I'm not an expert in it, so I won't pretend to be. I will check out the resources we mentioned, Drew Cannoli for me and Jason Vale from Pat there. And it's definitely something I want to do in the future. Definitely want to maybe do a juice fast and see how it goes. Because again, if we go back to what I talked about earlier with education and experience, it's all about experience for me. Like, you know what I mean? Experience how my body felt. That's why when I get people going, like my friend today, one of my friends said to me, he saw me putting water into my glass bottle, and he's like, do you not put salt in with that? And I was like, no. And he goes, what about the electrolytes? And I was like, listen, dude, my body feels pretty damn good at the moment, so, like, don't be, like, you know what I mean, the stress of worrying about not putting salt into your water is going to do far more detrimental effects to your body than not worrying about it at all. Do you know what I mean? There's those sort of things as well, but the juicing, yeah, check out those resources.
All right, here's one you're going to struggle with, definitely. Okay. New year, you've got someone comes to you and they're just saying, you know, I'm feeling a bit drained, jaded, and, you know, energy isn't great. I'm not that motivated. Give me two resources. Give me a book and give me a YouTube lecture that they can watch that's going to help them turn their life around or push them forward.
Oh, that's very, you fucker. I am going to struggle with that. I honestly think one of the best, it's funny, I actually haven't read this book, but yet I'd recommend it. I haven't read it cover to cover, like, because I really love it, and I genuinely mean the word love here. I don't use throw that word out, but I have a huge amount of love for Sean Croxton. You know Sean, do you?
Yeah.
Else. That, like, for what that man has done for just everyone, that, like, just the stuff he puts out, like, that guy puts summits together and they're like, you know, $50, and I'm an affiliate to them, but I would buy them 10 times over, because I just think he deserves that, you know. But I would recommend his ebook, The Dark Side of Fat Loss, because it's easy enough to read. I think the layperson can read it. Like, you know, there is like Weston Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Generation, but I'm like, you can't recommend that to someone who doesn't read a book.
Paul Check's one's another one, isn't it?
Healthy Moving Be Healthy is another I would absolutely recommend that as well. That is another one I would recommend. And a YouTube would probably be Paul Check's Nutrition Dirt Facts. That's a very good one. There's a few of those on YouTube, so they would probably be things. Yeah, so Paul Check's Healthy Moving Be Healthy, Sean Crockett's Dark Side of Fat Loss, they're easy enough books to read, and probably Paul Check's Nutrition Dirt Facts on YouTube would be things that I would gear them towards.
And I'm going to ask you personally, Alan Watts, you mentioned a lot, I've seen some of his stuff. What lecture do I need to watch on Alan Watts?
He has stuff on YouTube, lots of stuff on YouTube that lots of different people have put up, but I bought his You're It audiobook for €50 on iTunes, and it's 12 hours.
Okay.
And it's funny, I said it to a friend the other day. I said it was the I've got so many friends. Can you say that to a friend the other day?
Nameless friends, Bobby.
Nameless friends. The voices in my head. No, but I said to my friend, it was probably the best. I would have paid €500 for this audiobook, honest to God. Like, I wouldn't have paid it at the time, but, you know, looking at it now, like, it was the best €50 I probably ever spent.
It's called You're It?
You're It. I'm telling you, Pat, it's anyone listening. Alan Watts, he's got this beautiful English accent that you could just listen to. Like, there's another guy like Terence McKenna, and even Osho, like, while they're Britain, I haven't listened to much of Terence McKenna, very little part of Terence McKenna, but I've listened to a bit of Osho, but they have these voices that are hard to listen to. Like, Osho speaks really slowly.
I got some of Osho's stuff. I don't feel I'm ready for that. I don't know.
Yeah, like, Osho's like, you know, like, the woman goes up to Osho, like, you know, how can I help my child reach potential? Osho's like, your question has no meaning, and you're just like, yeah, you're like when there's all spaces, you're like, come on, Osho, say the next word. But Alan just has this like, I just have a man crush on his voice, basically. Like, he just has this, I could just listen to him for hours, and he's so logical. And
I think a lot of people will know that one. What if money had no meaning, or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, and to be honest, in one way, that is a great snippet, but it's kind of like, I love the White Stripes. Like, I'm obsessed with the White Stripes now. And people don't judge the White Stripes. Yeah, okay, White Stripes are unreal, Jack White unreal. But it's kind of like, I see that little snippet as the Seven Nation Army. Do you know
sure,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's like, da, 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 and I'm like, have you listened to any of their other albums? Or Jack, or ever listened to Jack White speak or anything like that? Like, Jack White's, you know, I really don't know him personally, but his interviews, I did like, and I obviously love his music and love him as a musician. But it's the same with Alan Watts. People see that and they're kind of like, oh yeah, that's deadly. I'm like, yeah, but listen to his other shit. His other shit is so good.
I think we'll probably leave it at that, Robbie. I'm going to get you back on definitely in the next couple of podcasts, because we could talk all day, or you could talk all day.
I mean, that 25 minutes turned into 54 minutes here, so.
We're not doing too bad. Any plugs you want to give to your website or anything like that, Robbie?
No, Pat, as you know, I need your help desperately with marketing. So I am the worst marketer in the world. Listen, it's obviously something with me. Like, I obviously have something like with money, or, you know, like those, you know, the kind of like, I definitely have this kind of negative thing towards money that I need to get rid of. You gave me those Dan Kennedy books, which were excellent. Dan Kennedy's like, you got to change that mindset. I'm like, I know I got to change that mindset. Like, money is not evil. I know it's not evil. And if you do good things with it, it's, you know, it's definitely not an evil thing. But just for anyone listening, I'm just, I had a meeting with a very good friend of mine today, and we talked, and he just said to me, you're such a clean slate, you're just so fun. And that's what I am. Like, I just want to be genuine. Like, anyone knows Elliot Hulse, that's who I am as well. Okay, I'm not Elliot putting a video out yet, but I'm just genuine. There's no bullshit with me.
Yeah.
I'm authentic, and maybe I feel if I market, I just lose a bit of that, but maybe that's just it's an insecurity in me that if anyone out there knows how to help me, I know Pat's going to probably help me with some of that. I mean,
I think your passion alone for what you do is going to bring you, you know, where you
want to go. I hope it does. I mean, you always hear that, like, you know, if you're just passionate what you do, you know, don't worry about the money. But I just generally, listen, I love life. I'm so happy with who I am. And let me just say, I don't know if my parents are going to listen to this, so I just want to give a shout out to my parents who I love deeply, because like, it's funny, this is going to sound a bit weird, but anyway, I just said a second ago I'm honest and really genuine, but like, I often sit down, and I don't know if you do this, Pat, I don't write down gratitudes, but I often lie in my bed and be like, what am I thankful for? I'm like, I'm thankful for my body, like, I'm so thankful for the hands I have, and my feet and my eyes, like some people go, you know, I always go, I would never swap my body with anyone else. Like, I haven't got a six pack, I actually have a bit of fat around my midsection, but I would never swap my body. I'm so happy and grateful for the body I have, and like, I often think I'm so grateful for my parents too, because like, my parents did never bet me up or slap me around or sexually abuse me, so like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I am so appreciative for those little things, those little gratitudes. And I just want to say to people too, listen, like, I'm just like you guys. Do I go when my iPhone like stalls for like a mini second? Of course I do. I'm human. Like, you know, I'm not like this guru or this guy who like has no flaws. Like, do I lose my temper? Yes. Do I get frustrated with people? Do I say inappropriate things about people and then later on go, I shouldn't have said that? Of course I do. I'm human just like everyone else. As I said at the very start of the podcast, I'm Robbie Burke. I'm a human. I'm from planet Earth. I'm just like everyone else. And I just want to say thanks for having me on, Pat. And I really, really would love to do it again.
We definitely will, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to give you a bit more of an audience. All Things Strength and Wellness is the podcast.
It's the podcast. Funny, in the wintertime, I don't do as many podcasts as again. I don't like being on the computer, you know, at nighttime with the lights. But in summertime, I get like a lot banged out. Usually get like 20 banged out in the summer. And then the blog is All Things Strength. Again, I came into the field and I was all like, oh, I'll put up loads of blogs. And I was like, geez, I actually don't know that much. So I kind of stopped, you know what I mean? Because all these blogs were popping up from all these young coaches. And I was like, I'm only going to put something up when I genuinely think it's going to be of good value. So I put up a circadian rhythm post there, which I thought was pretty good. It's basically based off the book Lights Out. And it's just information on that and my thoughts on circadian rhythm. So I thought that was a good post. But the blog is that. My website is robbieburke.com as well. And that shows some services and stuff like that. But yeah, if anyone wants to get in contact with me or have talk or anything like that or anything at all, anything, I'll just get in contact with me.
Deadly. And I'll definitely be having Robbie down in the new year for in-staff training and hopefully some talks and stuff like that. So, Robbie, thanks a million again. Anyone with questions or anything like that that they want me to pass on to Robbie, or questions for upcoming podcasts, just shoot them on to me, info@pativityfitness.com, and I'll speak to you all soon.
Thanks a million, Pat.
Thanks, Robbie.